from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH. This is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. We'll get connected in just a little bit with our K-State insider, Tim Fitzgerald. We'll give him a buzz, waiting on that connection, but we're talking K-State. It's a good place to start this conversation, Tom. The CFP rankings come out. Only BYU is in. Not surprising after K-State and Iowa State lose. I think, you know, if you want to see, and honestly, this is probably the best scenario for K-State also, is for BYU to just win the rest of their games. Like, if you're a Big 12 fan, if you're a K-State fan, BYU can just win the rest of their games. And then what you would have is maybe they creep up high enough that if they were to lose in a Big 12 championship game, then you could get two Big 12 teams in that way. So that was really the takeaway for me. Otherwise, I don't think it matters too much in the CFP just yet. I don't think there was anything egregious. I don't think some of these unbeaten teams that haven't played anybody are going to stay unbeaten and they'll fall out. So it's far from settled. It's a pretty good starting point. I think it's fair. I think it's a fair starting point. And what you have now in the Big 12 is Iowa State with one loss, Colorado with one loss, and then K-State, Texas Tech, Cincinnati, Arizona State, and West Virginia all with two losses. So it is a jumbled mess in the Big 12, Tommy. But I didn't have any problems with the CFP.
Yeah, I mean, I think that basically it was what we thought it would be going into it. I mean, you know, I think really what my takeaway from the first rankings was what could have been, you know, what could have been had Iowa State not lost, what could have been had Kansas State not lost. Now, would Kansas State have gotten all the way up to number 12 had they won against Houston on Saturday? Probably not. You know, I do think that as I'm just watching them reveal those teams, I'm thinking to myself, man, what could have been? It could have been a little bit different. And then, you know, had a more clear view on what it was going to take and have it not potentially be as uphill of a battle for Kansas State.
Let's bring in Tim Fitzgerald, our K-State insider. Go powercat.com at Life of Fitz on X. Fitz, it's a really strange Big 12 right now. You know, you look back at it, and at the time, the two big wins we thought for K-State, which were Arizona and Oklahoma State, don't look like big wins at all now. And, you know, Colorado is the big win of the year for sure, and on the road against West Virginia. That's handy. But this probably is going to be a mess. Where's your Jayhawk gear? Because K-State fans ought to become the biggest Jayhawk fans the rest of the way. Kansas can basically help K-State in every game that they'll play the rest of the way.
It's crazy how the perceptions of what is a hard and easy schedule have changed over the last 3 months. I mean, look, K-State's heading into an easy stretch, right? Arizona State and Cincinnati.
Right, yeah.
No, and Colorado's got to still play Oklahoma State and Utah. That's tough. You know, it's just amazing. Let's just say this. I don't think Colorado's losing. I don't. I think they're playing as well as anybody in this conference has. They're starting to show some consistency in performance. And if BYU does lose, it's only going to be a single game, so that won't help Kansas State in any way. They really just need someone to beat Colorado, and K-State went out, and they're back in charge of their fate for the most part.
Yeah, I know, Fitz, it's kind of like picking at a scab a little bit, but, you know, doing a postmortem after the Houston game on Saturday. I mean, I think the one thing that the Cougars did really well, of course, they played really solid defense for the most part, but they were able to muddy the game up literally and figuratively and just really get it to a point to where they were able to take Kansas State out of their rhythm. And from an athletic talent standpoint, Houston is not anywhere close, I don't think, especially offensively, to where Kansas State is. But the one thing about Willie Fritz is that he can muddy those games up, and he knows how to play the Wildcats. That's a lot of different aspects of that game. What were some big takeaways from you?
Well, exactly that. You know, he coached that game in a way that reminded me of Bill Snyder. I'm going to take these out.
That worked. Can you hear me?
Yep, we got you.
We can. Yep.
I can't hear you. These things. Coach that game in a way that reminded me of Bill Snyder, in the fact that he was outmanned. He knew that. So he had to find a way, as you put it perfectly, muddy up the game and keep it a little bit ugly, keep the scoring down, and then put K-State in a position, hopefully at some point in the fourth quarter, where they'll make a mistake. And K-State walked right into that by trying to throw the ball. Then after that, you could just see the momentum and everything shift in that game, and it was now pretty much Houston in control the rest of the way, all because K-State forgot that sometimes the best play call in football is punt. Because if they had just run the ball three times and punted, their defense probably would have won the game for them.
But, Houston took away Avery's legs too, right? Like
Yeah, I think we're now realizing Avery was still hurt because he wasn't able to run. He doesn't have much pep to his step right now. I mean, he's getting tracked down pretty easily. We saw Dylan Edwards get tracked down a few times. I thought, again, K-State had worse footing than their opponent in a bad weather situation, which is an ongoing concern of mine. How does that keep happening? So, yeah, it was just one of those nightmare scenarios. K-State did everything it needed to do to participate in that nightmare. I mean, this was all in their control, and they didn't control what they could.
Do we think there's any path fit? Sorry, Tommy. As you mentioned the path to get there, but is there an, you know, if they win out and one of those wins is Iowa State, we saw 18 is their ranking. They'd probably need to get up to what, 11 to, yeah, you know, depending on what happens. 7 spots with a game against Iowa State still remaining. Is there enough on the bone for them to get there potentially?
I don't think so. I don't see any way. not based on what I just saw from the ratings. Yeah, they'll move up, but they would get frog leaped. They just would. What evidence I have of that? Indiana with an absolutely worthless schedule. They've beaten one winning team this year, and that team's 5-4. Washington, and you've got them ahead of BYU, which has played 3 teams with winning records. In fact, 2 teams in the CFP's own rankings. They've beaten SMU and Kansas State, and they're behind Indiana. So no, the fix is in, for the most part. There is a path for the Big 12 to get two in, as long as BYU doesn't win the conference. BYU goes undefeated and loses, right, the championship game, that's the chance. It would have been the same maybe for Iowa State, but now they had the loss. And, you know, we can complain about the committee, which I like to do because I can't explain some of the things they did. But at the end of the day, the Big 12 with the losses by Iowa State and Kansas State did itself dirty. It absolutely ruined its most honest chance to get 2 schools into that playoff. If you've got 2 12-0 or 11-1 and 12-0 teams playing in a championship game, it's going to be hard to say no. But now pretty much you hope that 12-1 BYU could get in if they lost a championship game. But I sense BYU might lose a game along here, and the Big 12 will be right back to just getting one team in because of their own competitive nature of this conference.
I keep going back, Fitz, to you mentioned Willie Fritz and obviously the way that he coached the game on Saturday versus Kansas State. Zion Chris is not, you know, this outstanding quarterback. Like he definitely took the role over earlier this season or a couple weeks ago from Donovan Smith, primarily because of what he did against Kansas State. But I mean, he's not a Heisman guy, right? Like he did well in that role, and Willie Fritz put him in positions to be able to be successful. He ran the ball a ton from the quarterback position. He didn't throw it much, but he was 11 of 11 throwing the football. And as I'm looking at, you know, not only his performance, but then the way that Kansas State defensively should respond to that or adjust to that with future games and whether they're taking on quarterbacks that are mobile or not. To me, just even looking at what Chris did in this game, leads me to believe that there probably should be some adjustments defensively for Kansas State.
Well, I think they took advantage of, obviously, K-State guys in coverage peeking into the backfield.
Yeah,
I don't think there's any doubt about that. They perfectly timed when they wanted to throw the ball and how they wanted to do that. And they took advantage of K-State's own tendencies. And I think that points out to what Chris Klieman said after the game. We got to get back to fundamentals. That includes your assignment here is to cover this dude. That's it. Yeah, you got to be aware of what else is going on the field, but you can't forget that duty, and that's what they kept doing. I was astonished at the lack of fundamentals and discipline showed by K-State in this game. Coach Klieman was right, but also I thought the coaches made some really egregious errors in what they did. So, I can't imagine getting this far into your season and then just not paying attention to details in the game. I'm still trying to wrap my head around how that works.
Let's talk basketball, because that football game is really annoying and aggravating, and hopefully Colorado loses a game and they get back in it. Let's talk basketball. I thought from the beginning, I've thought this collection of players seem to fit, right? I think, you know, it's not just that they got a lot of talented players, it's that Jerome Tang went and got a bunch of players that seem to, on paper, whatever you want to call it, do fit together well. Are they going to take this many threes? I think they are, because I think Jerome Tang, every time he's asked about it, is like, yeah, I have no problem with it. Not just with Hausen, who's taken a ton, but they're kind of all taking a lot of threes. Is that the identity of this team? Do they want to shoot the three that way, you think?
I think they want to shoot it more often because they're better at it.
For sure they're better at it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, every statistical category that gave them trouble last year was improved upon in the opening. Granted, it's New Orleans, but that's a trend I welcome. For example, their season low last year in turnovers was 10, and they had 9 in their first game of the season. So they're shooting the three. I think they shot 38% as a team last year. They shot 31.5%. So, yeah, I think so. But what's going to happen here is they're going to go through a period of showing on film that they're going to shoot the three, and Brendan Hausen is going to shoot that three from deep, and the defense will have to adjust and come out and cover them. Because if you're going to shoot 38%, I don't care if you're from 30 feet out, you need to get a hand in that guy's face. So at that point, then I think the inside game will really loosen up. And that was one of the problems I had last year. Nobody had to really worry about you shooting a three-pointer because that would probably be a miss. And they could just sag back and let you take that. But now they're going to have to move their defense around to address guys, and you know, they'll be able to spread the floor out a little bit better.
It was a game, the opening night on Tuesday against New Orleans Fitz, where you know, all offseason, I feel like the topic of conversation is really centered around the newcomers, whether it's Hausen or Coleman Hawkins, Doug McDaniel, Max Jones. But it was David Gasson that led the team on Tuesday night. You know, double-double for him, 2 points off of his career high, 21 and 15. And I really felt like, just in watching that game, he came out of the gate with this effort level that was through the roof. And to me, you know, I think that obviously sets a nice precedent as the beginning parts of the season roll on, that, yeah, the attention may have been on the newcomers and the transfers and all of that, but it was a returner that really led the Wildcats on Tuesday night.
Yeah, it was cool to watch. When he plays hard, he's a tough matchup for anyone because of his speed and athleticism. He's got good hops, so he can get up there and get boards. And plus, he played hurt almost all last year. He's having back problems. And so I think this is a good sign that David could have a great season as long as he can stay healthy. But let's also not forget maybe the ultimate motivator is that he's got a lot of competition for playing time this year.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to get gifted playing time. I don't care if you are Coleman Hawkins. If you're not playing well, there's someone on the bench that will come in and play and probably be more effective. And that's just a radical change from what they've had. In fact, you could argue they've got too many guys that need to be in the rotation. I don't know how Jerome Tang's going to sort it out. But that's a better problem than what they had last year with not enough dudes that could dribble, pass, and shoot, which seems like a basic requirement.
That would be a good place to start with basketball. Mm-hmm. You look at the schedule. You know, KU is going to play a ton of really good teams early on. We're going to know a lot about KU real quick if we don't already. K-State doesn't have that.
No.
They've got LSU, who right now I think people are moderately high on LSU, but they really aren't going to get into a lot of meat until, I don't know, mid-December.
Yeah.
It's going to be a while. So what should we be looking for in a lot of these early games where they probably will be able to kind of roll a little bit?
Yeah, they should be taking care of business. And I think if the Big 12 was at 18 conference games and not 20, Jerome Tang would have a little more meat on the bone here. But I think he decided with this rebuild, unlike last year when he really challenged his team and they never got their footing, that he was going to let this group kind of grow into each other and become a better team. Now, am I concerned about when they start Big 12 play, it's going to be a shock to the system? Oh, hey, heck yes. But I think this is kind of an altered plan. And he also knows that in reality, when you're playing 20 Big 12 conference games, you don't need to worry about having enough quad one wins or quality of strength of schedule. The conference is going to take care of that. So I think he laid out a much more realistic pathway for his team. But I'll tell you what, this is also not a non-conference schedule that you want if you're going to be on the bubble, because that could bump you on the wrong side of the bubble. But I think he feels like he's got a team that can firmly get in. He just needs them to have time to kind of gel and get used to each other.
Fitz, let's do a really quick therapy session. I'll be honest with you. This isn't a question about X's and O's or their schedule, wins and losses, that sort of thing. But one thing I mentioned to Jacob the other day that I really felt like, and I do still feel this way, that what the Wildcats and what Jerome Tang needs this season more than anything else is just a sense of calm because of how crazy things were last season, the roller coaster of emotions, distractions off the court, all the speculation, all of that. And I know that that can then turn into success on the court, but how important do you think that is for the Wildcats as they continue on, that just to have just calm and just to go out and play basketball and not make headlines in a lot of different ways, maybe be under the radar a little bit?
An enormous preseason distraction, self-inflicted by the university. Followed by, bluntly, that team wasn't good enough. I enjoyed watching that game, even though it was a mismatch, so much more than last year, because last year they'd come down and you knew they were going to either take a bad shot or turn the ball over. And it was just the most – I thought Jerome Tang and his coaching staff did an incredible job to get that bunch to the postseason, because that was not a good team. They didn't fit together in any way. They were really a bunch of misfit toys that didn't all fit together, and they didn't have a true point guard that could control things. And I didn't enjoy watching that team play in any way. They played a bad brand and a sloppy brand, and they still made it to the postseason in a tough conference, and that's a big compliment. This team's different. This team's got a lot more pieces. They fit together much better. And they got dudes. And you can take Doug McDaniel off the floor. We all expected him to start, and they're fine with C.J. Jones. And I think the key here is Max Jones is a dude, and we didn't see that coming. We saw him coming out of a smaller school, and it's turned out this guy's going to be really good for Kansas State.
I can't wait for him to get to Big 12 play. Again, nothing's changed on the fact that, like, the way it all fits together. And I do think just talent wise, it's Tang's best collection so far. All right, Fitz, what do you guys have going at GoPowerCat.com?
Well, a little bit slower this week. The podcast released this morning, so the PowerCat podcast is out. Honestly, we're lighter on coverage because it's an off week. We need it too, but we will be back for Saturday's game at Bramlage Coliseum. It's Cleveland State, and then push right into game week next week, because it's enormous. Arizona State's a really good team. If Scadaboo's healthy, he's one of my favorite players in the Big 12. He's a beast. K-State's going to have its hands full if they continue to kind of play sluggish and disengaged from any kind of passion for the game.
Here we go. It'll be a week. GoPowerCat.com. Follow Fitz at Life of Fitz on X. Be good. We'll talk again next week.
Thank you, boys.
There goes Tim Fitzgerald. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll catch our breath after the back-to-back guest there. The IHOP hotline will open back up. Of course, brought to you by IHOP. You can celebrate the weekdays with your new IHOP House faves. All your favorites just $6 Monday through Friday, 869-1240. Don't go away. Sports Daily right after this.
EFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. Crestview Country Club, sponsor of the program. Fall at the club, always busy. Going to be a little rain. I was going to try and play a little golf tomorrow, but it might get rained out. That's all right, because they've got a simulator there, Tommy, that you can go get in on if you're feeling it. And then, of course, the holidays at the club, brunch experiences. There's a New Year's Eve event. Thanksgiving, you can go in and eat Thanksgiving. You can get some, take it home, finish cooking it. We utilize it every year we've been there. We have no family here. It's real handy. But give them a call. Talk about all the different memberships. Tell them we sent you from Sports Daily. As we come back, Tommy, Thursday Night Football. Let's get into it a little bit. I don't know how to handle this one. We talked to PJ Glasser. He thought, you know, the over maybe looked too high. That stuff doesn't jump out at me. I do think we're going to get points, which is usually good for betting, right, for those same game parlays. But I don't have a great feel for which players. I think Ja'Marr Chase is always a guy I like to go after just because he's incredible, right? Burrow's been really good lately. Burrow's quietly having an unreal season. Everybody talks about, you know, the year Lamar Jackson's having and all these quarterbacks. Burrow's got 20 touchdowns and 4 interceptions, right? And 2,200 yards already through 9 games. So, you know, he's trending to 4,000 yards and 40 touchdowns here. And I feel like we're not talking quite enough about, and I know it's because of their record, but Burrow's been on fire.
Yeah, it's because of their record, number one. But I think what also, and I'm going to give Joe Burrow a little bit of credit here, I think what also makes it impressive is the fact that they've not really had T. Higgins as of late, and they're not going to have him again tonight. So, you know, I think that that's going to play a role in it too. And I think that also shows how important and how essential Ja'Marr Chase is to your team. And I know that he's a guy that is going to garner a significant amount of money, you know, from any team. Like, he'll be the highest paid receiver in the NFL and all of that. The Bengals, you know, absolutely have to prioritize budgeting him in long term, because the bottom line is that when you don't have T. Higgins, Burrow's, you know, he has to lean on Ja'Marr Chase. And I don't know if there's a better wide receiver in the league to lean on when you need somebody like Ja'Marr Chase. You absolutely have to prioritize that.
It's Chase and Jefferson for me. I don't know which one I'd take over the other. Probably, I guess I'd take Jefferson, but Chase is, it's funny. I think Burrow gets overshadowed because of Mahomes, right? And I think that Chase gets overshadowed a little bit because of Jefferson, but what you're talking about, like, players that look like they're, you know, they're probably going to be like Hall of Fame players, and they just happen to play for the same team. They get overshadowed a little bit. I'm with PJ though on, if you're taking a side, I do like the Bengals and the points here. Stylistically, I just, this Bengals defense that struggled, it's going to be hard for me not to take that over. I know it's a lot of points, but man.
That was my point in asking him the question, was that everything points to the over being the play.
I know, which is scary.
Even though the number is at 53 right now, which is high. I mean, clearly that line is high for a reason. But even knowing that, everything is still telling me bet the over, bet the over, bet the over. You know, because of the weapons that Baltimore has, because of how bad the defense has been for the Bengals. I mean, the defense is and the offensive line, the reason why the Bengals have the record that they have. So all of those things point to that, which inevitably probably means that it's going to be a really low scoring defensive matchup.
You know, we've had, and I'd have to go back and look at each Thursday night game each week, and it feels that old trend of those games being duds, though. Don't you think that's kind of out of the, you know, we're out of that woods on that. The Jets and the Texans were good. 21-13, certainly not as much offense as that one, but I wouldn't call that like a dud. I think there were injuries involved there. Was it Rams, Vikings? The week before, 50 points there between those two teams. And I'm just going week by week here and looking. Broncos, Saints, certainly the best of the night. The Broncos put up 33. That was a weird game in general, but still, 43 points. You know, you find a way to get there. We'll go back one more week just to look at the recent history. In week six is when you had 60 points between the Niners and the Seahawks. So for a long time, I think we just defaulted into, oh, Thursday night football, the offenses will struggle. It hasn't really been the case this year. So I hope we get a lot of points. It's a big time game. I think you laugh every time I would still call the Bengals a threat in the AFC. And I get it. They're 4-5. They got to get there first. But man, if they get there, it's kind of like what we've said with the Chiefs last year. If you get there with Burrow based on his history, if they can get there, it's Burrow in the playoffs. And I think anytime you got a player like that in the playoffs, it's, you know, it's worth calling it a threat. They played and the Chiefs barely got him.
There are a lot of teams that are that way. The Jets are a threat. There are teams that you look at in both conferences that are probably going to miss the playoffs that are a threat when you play them because they've underperformed, they've underachieved, all of that. And so I guess in that context, if you want to call the Bengals a threat, then I would agree with that. I don't think that they're a threat, probably in the way that you mean it, because I don't think they're going to get to where they need to be long-term playoff threat. But in a one-week context where they could play spoiler, I'm not even talking about in the playoffs. I'm talking about as the regular season goes on.
Of course they can win.
They can be a one-week threat to any team that they play against, but they're not going to challenge, I don't believe, any of the top teams in the conference in the playoffs because I don't think they're going to get there.
That's a different conversation. So what I would identify as a threat to me, the way I'm saying it, is if you played that team, and I'm talking about the Chiefs here, if the Chiefs played that particular team in the playoffs, there is a path where the Chiefs could get beat. I would tell you that I think there are far more of those teams this year. Even in a year where the Chiefs have started unbeaten, I think there are more of those teams this year than I thought there would be going into the year. I only thought there would be a handful. I don't think that anymore. I think Buffalo certainly is. I would define the Jets that way. They're not going to get there, I don't think, but I would define them that way. I think Pittsburgh absolutely is. Didn't see that coming. Baltimore, we did see coming. We thought before the year Cincinnati would be, so that's not a surprise. Houston's probably less of a threat, in all honesty, than we thought, and maybe they'll get back there, but the Chargers are certainly more of a threat. And I think that, look, the Chargers, say what you want, and I know they've played, but the Chargers have better point differential right now than the Chiefs do. Like the Chargers, I think with the way they play defense and can run the ball, you're telling me that couldn't come into Arrowhead and present problems? I think it absolutely could. And then in the NFC is where there's way more than we thought there would be. Nobody thought Washington would be that way. I want to say I don't think that, but how can you sit here and say that watching the way they play, right? Philadelphia, they're starting to find their groove. And obviously Detroit is, I would say Minnesota is, I think everybody before the year and would still say Green Bay is Atlanta a threat now? I mean, probably again, another team that the Chiefs, we've seen that matchup. And then I don't think anybody necessarily is out West unless the Niners get healthy, which if they get healthy, they certainly are, but there are more of them. And I think the Bengals are squarely in the middle of that. If they're to play in the postseason, is that a team that could beat the Chiefs? I think the answer to that is sure.
And that's fine. I mean, that's a fine conversation to have. But when you put it in the context of will they be able to get to that point, that's really where I'm wanting to pump the brakes on teams like the Bengals, because I think it's a futile conversation to have on could they beat a team like the Chiefs in the playoffs? Sure they could. Anybody could beat anybody in the playoffs. But are the Bengals even going to get to the playoffs? Like, that's where I start to pump the brakes a little bit. Or will they be in a position to even play the Chiefs in the playoffs? I mean, I think that if the Chiefs, I mean, obviously they're pacing towards the number one overall seed. I think I agree with PJ when he says that the game in Buffalo next week will probably ultimately determine who the number one seed in the AFC is. The Chiefs can, with their game against the Broncos, can all but wrap up the division I mean, super early in the year if they beat the Broncos. I mean, it's not totally done, but I mean, it certainly will go a long way. So let's assume that the Chiefs are the number one seed, and let's say that even the Bengals sneak in to the playoffs as the very last seed. I mean, they're going to have to play a couple of games, you know, or at least one game before they would even get to a Chiefs team that has a bye and all of that. So, like, there are a lot of different dominoes that have to fall a certain way for this exercise to even come to fruition.
Sure.
So, yeah, I mean, I think just in and of itself, can a team like the Bengals beat a team like the Chiefs in the playoffs? Sure. I think it's unlikely that it even gets to that point.
Okay, so I'm going to get the right now, the two teams, there are six teams ahead of the Bengals that they're probably not going to pass. The other, they would need to be the better of Indianapolis and Denver and Cincinnati. Denver has a one-game lead over Cincinnati. Indianapolis has the same record. Cincinnati will have a difficult schedule because of the division they play in. But, man, I think Cincinnati's way better than Indianapolis. And I think they're way better than Denver. And they just have to be the best of those three teams to get in.
I disagree with you. I mean, I think that when you look at the stars on the team, sure. I mean, you're going to put Joe Burrow over Bo Nix and Joe Flacco every day. You're going to put Ja'Marr Chase over the receivers that the Broncos have or the, you know, Colts have. I know, you know, they've got talented guys on all three of those teams. But yeah, from a star perspective, yeah, sure, I get it. But have you watched the Bengals play defense? Have you watched the Bengals offensive line play? Like, they are bad. They are bad.
The line's the problem.
They're bad. And so, like, yeah, it's really easy on the surface to look at Cincinnati and say, oh, they've got Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase. They're great. They're better than these other two teams. Well, I think if the sum of all of its parts tells you anything, they're probably not. Now, can guys like Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase overcome the deficiencies that the team has? Yeah, sure. But I don't think it's accurate at all to say, they're better than those other two teams, because I don't think that they are from top to bottom.
I think that they absolutely are. But the problem for them is their schedule is brutal. They go Baltimore, then Chargers next week on the road, back to back. They still got to play Pittsburgh twice. They do get Denver. And then the other two, like, if you want to call them soft games, the Cowboys on the road and Cleveland. I mean, Tennessee's the only cupcake they have left. That's their problem. That's why their chances and their percentages are low, is because of the schedule they have to play. Whereas, you know, Denver's going to be in a division with the Raiders. And then, I mean, Indianapolis's advantage in all of this is their division sucks and their schedule is going to be soft down the stretch. So, you know, if you want the Chiefs to win the Super Bowl, keep Cincinnati out of it. You'd much rather see Indianapolis. I mean, if you're a Chiefs right now, Tommy, I'll ask it to you this way. You're the Chiefs. You got a first round matchup, and they'll probably have a bye. So humor me. You had a first round matchup. Who would you choose for the Chiefs to play? The least, or power rank them. Who would you rather play? Indianapolis, Cincinnati, or Denver?
I would probably, out of those three right now, I would probably rather play Indianapolis out of those three, and then probably Cincinnati, and then probably Denver would probably, I think that's kind of where I would rank.
There is no world where I'd rather play Joe Burrow in the playoffs than Bo Nix. That's what it is for me.
Would you rather play against the Cincinnati defense, or would you rather play against Patrick Surtain and what the Broncos have?
I get it, but in the postseason, give me Bo Nix 100 times out of 100. And I think, you know, like, we know that in the NFL, historically, that's the way this kind of goes, right? Bad quarterbacks typically don't get that. I've done the exercise, and it's been in whatever it is, 30 years. There are like two seasons where a Hall of Fame or potential Hall of Fame quarterback have not won the Super Bowl. So, like, it does all kind of come down to that. Now, there are other factors, but it's the most important one, and not even close. It's the most important one when you get to the postseason. So if you're a Chiefs fan, I don't want to see Cincinnati in the postseason. I'd much rather Houston or Denver get in. Sorry, not Houston, Indianapolis or Denver get in. But that's, you know, you're 4-5. And this is not the first time we've been through this with Cincinnati either. They always start crappy, and then they're pesky by the end of the year. So we'll see how that goes. Big game tonight, a pretty impactful game tonight. This is another really good Thursday night football game. The fact that they get this on Thursday night, I am very much a proponent of the NFL putting good games on Thursday night. I know it's Thursday night, but by Thursdays, I'm ready for some NFL football. Where have you gotten to now that we're this far into Thursday night football? I love when we get these good games on Thursday nights.
I'm really excited for this game. I mean, now we're through the World Series. Like, that's all done. This is a really, really good matchup. I think it's a prime opportunity, like I mentioned at the top of the show, for the Bengals or for the Ravens to fully assert themselves as the team that can challenge the Chiefs for a three-peat. And so I definitely like this matchup a lot. I'm really excited to lock into it tonight. My only gripe, and you and I were actually, I think we were texting about this on, when was it, Monday night? When we had Monday Night Football, we had KU, we had Wichita State, we had all three of those games, you know, going at the same time. The odd man out for me was the KU game because it was on ESPN+. That's my only gripe with Thursday Night Football, is that it's on Prime Video, and so you can watch other things, but you have to get out of that program, you have to open up another application, you know, like, so... If there's something else on, or if there are multiple games on a Thursday night, it makes it hard to watch all of them. So I like this game tonight because there isn't a whole lot else going on, so I can lock into it. But man, it's difficult when, you know, you've got Monday Night Football and you've got the Shockers that are on cable basically, and you can go back and forth. And then, you know, there's another game on ESPN+. That one was the odd man out.
You know what you need to do?
Don't even bring up the multiple TV thing.
Sneak down to the basement, put your foot down. And just hang a second TV. What is the worst thing that could happen if your wife came home and there was a second TV down there? You think she's going to take it down? I mean, she's not going to divorce you for a second TV.
I think
TV.
She would take it down.
Leaving those hardware holes in the wall?
Yeah, she is. She would take it down and she would patch up the holes in the wall before I even got home. Like, it would look like it did before I did anything to it by the time I actually realized what was going on. This is the same. I love my wife to death. This is the same woman that just for fun will like rearrange our refrigerator randomly. And I come home and all of a sudden the eggs are in a different place. And like, it's just what she does. She'll rearrange the job that I do in loading the dishwasher. I'll come home and she'll, like, with dirty dishes. Like, nope, that dirty plate goes there. Why are you rearranging the dishwasher? Everything is going to get clean. So, no, she would absolutely take down a second TV that I put up on the wall in my basement.
I think you take that risk. I think you just, it doesn't even have to be, but you can get TVs for nothing now, for like $100. Just go grab one. Just hang it right next to the TV to see what happens.
This is a trap.
Or don't even hang it. Don't even hang it. Do this then. Put it on the box. Like, just put it there, right? You're not going to throw the TV in the trash can. You just pull it out. They're all streaming everything now anyway. You pop it in. You got to connect it to Wi-Fi. Bing, bang, boom. There you go.
I think more than anything, you just want to see what the ramifications of this will be.
I certainly do. I absolutely want to see it and hear about what happens. That is 100% correct statement. Let's continue on this trade. Let's preview the Chiefs game. When we come back, we really haven't dug into this game against the Broncos at all. We did a little bit in the first hour, but we'll do that next on the way out. You want to win some HTO, free iced tea, and free coffee, iced or hot? All you got to do to win one of each is text us right now. The keyword is tea, and the short code is 20357. These will be good for any of the Wichita Metro locations, east or west or in Derby. You can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. Good luck, everybody. Sports Daily, previewing the Chiefs and Broncos when we return. NFL Thursday Night Football available for free on KFH and the Odyssey app. Tune into 97.5 and 1240 KFH at 6:30 for the Ravens, Bengals. Simply download the Odyssey app, search for KFH at game time. We previewed that game. Let's preview now the Chiefs and the Broncos, Tommy. We haven't really dug into this game. Rick pointed out earlier that, Denver's defense is really good. Sixth against the pass, ninth against the run. I would tell you this. I would predict that it starts on the ground for Kansas City. I think they abandoned that too quickly in the Tampa game. They admitted that. They talked about it. Mahomes talked about it. Reed talked about it. I think they're going to start there. Tampa also had a good run defense, and Kansas City was able to run the ball. So I think they'll start there. Patrick Mahomes yesterday basically called Patrick Surtain the best corner in the league. And he has one of the best corners in the league on his own team. But Surtain's next level good. Like, he is outstanding. I think for the Chiefs, you don't overthink it in this one, Tommy. You realize and understand that you're going up against Bo Nix. You take fewer risks in the game than you might in another game. You keep it simple. You run the ball and you take your shots. And I think, again, you and I both like Worthy in this game because the opportunity is there. I would imagine that Surtain focuses, if he should anyway, focuses on what we saw last week, and that's DeAndre Hopkins. It's probably not the week for Travis Kelce to slow down at all. He'll probably also be a big part of the offense, but I really like, I actually, you know, you guys don't like the 7.5-point line. I normally don't like these long lines. I kind of do. I think more than anything in this game, Tommy, the Chiefs defense goes up against Bo Nix. That's what I look at more than anything else. And they need to feast here.
You not think that Bo Nix is a good quarterback? I mean, he's had from a statistical point of view, outside of Jaden Daniels, who's had this extreme ascent over the last few weeks, Bo Nix is the next best rookie quarterback in the league. Statistically, he's been better than Caleb Williams has been. There's that, I think, to keep in mind also. And I don't think Bo Nix is incredible by any means, but he's, you know, led them to a winning record so far as a rookie quarterback, and that's not even something that Caleb Williams can say at this point. I think for Kansas City, in my mind, you mentioned like getting back to basics, running the ball. I do think they abandoned the run too quickly against Tampa Bay. When they started doing that again, that's when they started scoring points again against Tampa Bay in that second half. Will DeAndre Hopkins feast like he did against Tampa Bay? Probably not. The Denver secondary is better than Tampa Bay's secondary for sure. But it is DeAndre Hopkins, so I guess you never know. I think that, you know, Travis Kelce obviously got a ton of targets and catches in the Monday night game. While he will still be a large part of that offense, I don't think you can expect that kind of level of involvement from him on Sunday. I think Xavier Worthy, like we talked about earlier on in the show, it's an opportunity for him to really get a good share of targets and catches.
Back to Bo Nix. No, I think when the dust settles 3, 4, 5 years from now, we will look at Bo Nix as the fourth best quarterback in this class. Now, that's not saying he doesn't have a long career and all of these things, but I think long term, the three quarterbacks that were taken ahead of him, to me, will be better than him. He has had two really good games that came against the Raiders and the Panthers. And other than that, he's been very pedestrian. He can run the ball, though.
From a ceiling perspective, you may be right.
He can run the ball. And that's the threat, I think, for the Chiefs, is that he has been able to run the ball probably more than people expected him to be able to run the ball. There have been a lot of games where that becomes a real weapon for the Denver offense. And I think that is something that the Chiefs need to watch and be, you know, very careful of, is to not let him do that. But strictly as a passer, I think he's had two really good games and a lot of like meh games. Either way, like when we talk about the Chiefs and all the teams they have played and will play, he's going to be one of the bottom end quarterbacks that they will have faced this year. And I just think for that defense, after a game where Tampa's offensive coordinator, where did he come? He came from the Rams. Where he has just been phenomenal this year. The fact that they were able to do what they did in that game without Godwin, without Evans, is pretty impressive. I don't think that they're going to get that in Denver. I think they go back and be the Chiefs defense. Glasser at a good point. Maybe the way to go is Denver's team total under. But where is Denver going to generate this offense? Maybe it's Nix on the ground. McCaffrey's going to be able to take away their time. I don't know. I'll put it this way. I'm taking the Chiefs in the points. Spoiler alert for tomorrow.
I would wait because, as PJ pointed out, that line continues to move and it continues to go closer and closer.
Correct.
You know, to the Broncos at least. And so I would wait until maybe close to kickoff, because you could get it under a touchdown.
That'd be incredible. But even if it's at 7 and not 7.5, we'll come back. We'll tell you what's on the network tonight. We'll return on Sports Daily.